Delighted to welcome onto the podcast this week, Jason Quigley. Jason, thanks so much for joining us. It really is appreciated.
Pleasure, Greg, as always. Lovely to get on and chat with you. You're a man that I've spoke to a good few times now, and you've surprised me with your boxing knowledge. The very first time I spoke to you, I was like, geez, this man, I think, knows more about boxing than I do.
I don't think so. It's more of a fake it till you make it.
Very good.
Come here. We're speaking now, whenever people are listening to this, we're speaking now ahead of a couple of weeks out from Katie Taylor and the big Croke Park show. I mean, what a momentous occasion it is for Irish boxing. The journey, it's been on, the highs, the lows, the absence of boxing, and now in the mecca that is Croke Park, astonishing.
I think it's fantastic for the likes of Katie Taylor to do this, because I honestly don't think there's another Irish athlete, individual athlete, that can go and do what she's doing selling out Croke Park. It's a massive credit to her and her commitment that she has shown, not only commitment, but the resilience that she has shown through her career with women's boxing. Like, she is the reason that women's boxing is in the Olympics.
I remember watching an interview way, way, way back with Eddie Hearn. He looked about 12 in it. And he said at the time, and it was coming from a manager too, I don't know where women's boxing is going, but this girl's going to be an absolute superstar. As it turns out, he was right about the superstar and women's boxing. And we just saw something of a fight there at the weekend too. Like, they're coming thick and fast, MVP in there. I mean, women's boxing is absolutely huge, and much of it is down to her, if not all of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Eddie Hearn gets a lot of stick. Do you know what I mean? He's big, he's brash, he's out there, and, you know, but without the backing of Eddie, I don't think that Katie could have reached those heights either. And also, you have Brian Peters there as well, her manager, who likes to stay in the media, or likes to stay out of the media, but has kind of popped his face back in there recently.
He made a conscious decision, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah. So he's popped his face back in the media a little bit and getting back into, you know, you can see what Brian's doing there. He's, you know, showing his face again, and he's starting to sign up a few young Irish prospects, which is showing their kind of future potential in Ireland. But going back to the likes of Eddie is the person to promote a fighter. You know, he's not afraid to go out there, put his neck on the line, and say that this girl can be a superstar. Like, for him to come out and say that whenever women's boxing was...
There was nothing there, was really. Nothing I there. Think he had Ali and one or two others, but they were, you know, fighting through their father's names. No disrespect to them, but it was borderline novelty, you know.
And that's what I mean. Like, for the way that Eddie got behind her, the way that he promoted her, and the way that Katie carries herself as well. You know, it's a team effort, you know, from everybody involved there. Katie had the skill, had the talent, you know, Eddie had the talk and the mouth and, you know, the neck to go out there and put his own neck on the line with her, calling her going to be the next big superstar when women's boxing was nothing.
Yeah.
And then you had Brian Peters working his magic behind closed doors. So, like, she has a real good team behind her. She's a real good person. And she's getting everything she deserves. And yeah, it's going to be a historic night.
Is it true that you were looking to get on the bill?
I was.
Did you put the feelers out? Because, I mean, who whether active or, I know you're in a little bit of a hiatus at the moment, but if you're an Irish boxer, especially with your record, that's a card you want to be on, isn't it?
Yeah, so the way that this came about was Luke Keeler, another Irish fighter, messaged me on Instagram and was like, look, I don't know where you're at. Are you retired? Are you not retired? What's going on? But I would love a fight on the Croke Park card. Would you be interested?
Right.
And straight up, I says, absolutely. If the money's right, if everything goes to plan, I'm up for it. I'll 100% get back in the gym, and that's something that I can get.
But I think what's interesting, what you said there, is if the money's right.
Yeah.
So in other words, the spectacle of the event would not be enough for you to go back in there and take punches to the head.
Like, I don't want to come across a certain way when I say this, like, but like, the event is unbelievable. It's historic.
But your name, the other guys are great, but you've a bigger box office.
Yeah, like
I don't mean I know it's hard to say it, but the name Jason Quigley. I mean, you're a former world title contender, Oscar De La Hoya boxer. You know, yeah, you're not a journeyman. Exactly. And as I say, I don't mean that badly.
No, and that's...
You have to know your own value,
but
don't you?
But that's the standard that I hold myself to. And of course, it would be unbelievable to be on that card. It would be an honour to be on that card. But I have to look after myself, my family, and my life, my health. Do you know what I mean?
Have you always known your own value then in that regard? And that will come in terms of, you know, contract negotiations, what fights to take, whether you'll cut short preparation because of blah, blah. Like, when did you learn your own value that you could make that kind of a decision?
Probably in the last couple of years of my career, you know, as a young, hungry, not say immature kid, but as a young, hungry fighter coming up, like, money means nothing to you. It's like, I'll get into that ring, I'll fight anybody, I'll fight him for nothing. And that's the progression through boxing, you know, for a lot of fighters, that, you know, you get into it with that hunger, then next thing, you start to see the money that can be made, you start to see the life that you can make for yourself, you can start to see, for some instance, that generational wealth that can be created not only for you, but for your family, for your children down the line and their children. And then you start to look at things a little bit different. You know, your priorities change in life after you get to a certain age, after certain things in life happen. You know, so for me, it was probably the last couple of years where I started to look at things and be like, this has to make sense now for me.
But you could have been exploited, if the truth be told, because they, you're a promoter or a manager or whatever it might have sort of said, right, Jason Quigley, let's use that name as some sort of a gatekeeper. In other words, you know, throwing you into fights against prospects, or you know what I mean, which would damage your health, your reputation. You wouldn't have allowed that to happen. But you do see that with boxers that can't make the decisions that you've made. They become sort of like the stepping stone for prospects or whatever.
And like right away after my defeat to Berlanga, like that was a moment in my career that you look at and, you know, if you tell yourself whenever you were 12, 13, 14 years of age that you're going to headline Madison Square Garden.
Unbelievable.
You're going to go 12 rounds and a back and forth fight that could have possibly went my way if one or two things had went to plan. And you would have took it all day long. And now you look back at it. Yes, the longer it goes on, you know, you look back at it and you're grateful and thankful to headline Madison Square Garden and put in a good performance and give it everything you got. But, you know, that defeat, that defeat can, it hurts a fighter. Do you know what I mean? It'll always, you get in there to win, like you don't get in there to lose. Mm. And only maybe a couple of weeks after that, I got offered another big fight against another great fighter. And I turned it down because I just didn't want to be that fighter that just kept fighting because that's all he really knows.
And you know, like, not mentioning any names, but you see that. And in weights lighter than yours, often you see, you know, people just want that extra night, you know, like Lee Woods, or there's a whole crop of them in that bracket where, you know, and they go 12 rounds, they don't have the punch resistance anymore, they don't necessarily have the power, and, you know, for what? For that last bite of glory. Like.
Yeah, and, like, it is like a drug. I do take a drink now, but I've never took drugs or nothing like that before. But that high that you get.
I can only imagine.
You know, like that is something that is, my wife put it to me very, very well. She goes, Jason, if you decide to walk away from boxing, always understand that you're never going to get that same buzz out of whatever.
Yeah, good advice.
You know, and I was like, because right away I'm thinking, right, what do I get into now? You know, what's the next thing? And that just really hit home because boxing is a very individual sport. It's a very unique sport. Do you know, there's not just every Tom, Dick and Harry gets and goes and does that. Sells out arenas, do you know, bees in crowds in New York City. Like, get that feeling, get that buzz. Like, I remember, you know, in my hotel room and for that fight in New York, And like fighting in Las Vegas and everything as well. Like I always remember that the hotel room always hits me the most, because like my pro debut, and then I'll go back to the New York one, but my pro debut was Madison Square, or not MGM Grand in Las Vegas. It was on the Canelo Alvarez and Arislandi Lara undercard. And I remember, you know, you go in and the full fight week is like Tuesday is Grand Arrivals, Wednesday is press conference, Thursday is the media workout, Friday is the weigh-in, you know, and then the fight. It's a whole big build-up, but we flew in on the Monday. You just fly in, you check in, go to your hotel room. That's perfect. The next day is the Grand Arrivals. So they come up to my room, they get me in my room, take me down the back of the MGM and through the kitchen, out the back of the MGM, and here's this big gold stretch limo that you jump into, drive 2 minutes around the front, and here's this big Grand Arrival. And to be fair, there was a good few Irish there at the Grand Arrival. A lot of Mexicans started to get on my back then after that and started supporting me, because they were like, who's this Irish guy? Looks like Canelo, a bit white. I'm not ginger, but some people do mess and call me ginger.
You're in the space.
But like, they got behind me there. But I remember, like, that was the first real, that euphoria feeling, like, walking in there.
And did you, were you able to enjoy that? And did you feel you were there? Was there any imposter syndrome? Or did, were you like, no, actually, this is where I belong?
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. But I remembered going back up to my room after that. And it just silence.
Yeah.
And me texting back home to April. Hey, this was mad. Do you know, like, it was just weird.
Yeah.
Like, it was the first time that I felt that weirdness, like that, like, it was mad. But that was the, and that always sticks with me, like, that, and it always hit home, even at a very young age. I was like, all that down there, people wanting you, pictures, having the, you know, chatting, autographs, was class. Great feeling, great buzz. Then you go up to your hotel room and there's nobody
there. That's the reality,
isn't
it?
It's silence. Yeah. Like. And then I remember, as I was saying, in like a Madison Square Garden, just like, it was late at night. I think it was, and two or three nights before the fight. And, you know, you're cutting down on weight and you're just, you know, you're locked in. You can't really get him out of your head, or, you know, the fight, trying to pan it out in your head. How's it going to go? Your tactics, everything like that. And I remember just walking out a lovely big balcony that looked over New York, and Madison Square Garden was down there, and I remember, what's that band called? They were playing the night before I was there. It's an old school band.
I cannot help you on this one.
Oh, jeez. I'll think of it. Think of it and I'll let you know.
You can hum a song. I can I'm
trying to, don't want to murder it. But no, and I remember seeing, I'm like, oh, jeez, class, they're on the night before. And then next thing, there's my head popped up on it. You know, the big screens out, man. And it was just wee moments like that, that it was quiet, it was dark. And you just see those things and you're like, jeez.
Like, I mean, There was a sense of what you were achieving here at home, but I don't think, as you describe it now, the general population would have really have gotten the scale of what you were achieving at that time. Were you conscious of that at all, or does that matter? Because, you know, you can be adored all around the world, and you could go into the heart of Mexico and everyone says El Alamo, right? Yeah. But at the end of the day, people, you know, often we want to. It's at home that counts.
Oh, absolutely.
But was there any sense of, or maybe people were getting the buzz, maybe I'm framing it incorrectly, I don't know, because it was a massive, massive achievement, not just for Donegal, but for the country. And I just wondered, did it get the recognition it deserved?
Like, I've always kept a small circle.
Right.
So. You know, like, I've always kind of kept a small, close friend groups that been there from the start and, you know, created a few friends in. Since I left boxing, because I kind of opened my horizons a wee bit more. I got involved in a lot of other things and met some great people that I now call best friends. Like, and but no, like I do get great support.
Yeah.
Like, and
no, I can go back to even, you know, even say for instance in Steve Collins's glory years, not so much with Barry McGuigan, but like what he achieved down in Cork and not just there, but throughout his career, And then you ask people to name your top 10 sports people and his name might not be in there. Or even McGuigan's main. And I just don't think sometimes people understand in certain areas that, you know, this is just...
Well, I think that sums up the world that we live in very well, because the world that we live in now is, and boxing especially, it is, once you're a hot topic, everybody wants a piece
of
you.
Yeah, yeah.
Once you start to fall off, or once you start to just, your day's over and it's starting to come to an end, they're on to the next person that's coming through. Yeah. And that is the way that the life...
Did you have to deal with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know...
Now, it doesn't sound to me like the fame you ever sort of let it... You know, you never ran away with yourself because you've got people around you, not least your better half to keep you grounded, right? But, you know, from going from where you were to something closer to a civilian life, it's a big, big change.
Yeah, it is, and... You know,
especially now when you would take a free drink.
100%. 100%. I could have got so many free drinks back in the day if I had been taking a few. But yeah, no, like definitely, you know, you see the knockoff and you see where athletes and you see where people that lived a bit of fame and attention and everything, you see where they can struggle because like you just start to slip into the crowd then.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm lucky that I actually enjoy that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I wouldn't to describe what you're doing now, slipping into the crowd in terms of, you know, being a promoter, but also, you know, popping up on some of the biggest cards in the world, which we'll get to in a moment, not in the ring, but outside it. But just on sort of maybe that Madison Square fight, right? So you have those moments of, you know, your team's around you, then you're on your own. And then it comes to fight week and it's building up the ring walk, but then, you know, the ring's cleared, the seconds are out. What is it like in that moment when your opponent's opposite you? Is it nerves? Are you pure calm? Is it zen? Is it you want to go over and kick him in the balls, but you know you have to use your gloves? I mean, what's that time like?
To be honest, it's probably one of the best feelings.
Yeah.
Because there's no anticipation no more. There's no wondering, questioning, going through training camps. There's no waiting no more. Like, that to me was where I was just locked in.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what it was all about then for that moment.
And not always the way. Like, through my career, it didn't always be like that, but towards the end of my career, the work that I did to get to where I was, you know, and to get into that mindset and that frame of mind that you need to be in, it was just so clear.
Yeah.
It was just like, this is it. Me and you, let's go. And it was...
Mano a mano.
It was the best feeling. Like, and as I says, it just takes away all that doubt, all that wondering, all that anticipation, you know, this is it, like, let's go. And it was a great feeling. Like.
So I wonder then, is that separation, and I'll move on now, I don't want to get too deep into it, but, you know, you have your trainer, you have your plan and all that type of stuff. And then when a boxer gets into the ring, that can go out the window.
Oh, absolutely. Right?
And I wonder, is it that when it comes down to it, it's you in there. And, you know, some people can be very disciplined and listen to the coach. Others go, nah, I'm going to have a tear up now. This is my time.
Yeah, and that has happened to me in the past where
really?
I was told not to get into a tear up and I got into a tear up. And, you know, it's just maturing. It's, I suppose, it's just growing into a better fighter through the years by making mistakes. And, you know, I was very disciplined. Just going off of my last fight, like, you know, Berlanga was the monster, they called him.
Yeah.
You know, he had 16 fights, all first round knockouts in a row. And it was like, don't get into a tear up with this guy.
Yeah.
So first couple of rounds went perfectly. We were boxing him, staying nice and long, and was working a treat. Got knocked down and was a legit knockdown. hit me, wasn't hurt, wasn't rocked. Do you know what I mean? Just
what does that say? That's what they call a flash knockdown. So that means you stand up, you know where you are, the ring's not spinning, it's like fair, you know, there's a bit of a slap there, a bit of off balance, but I'm up and I'm ready to go. So that's
what happened to me. And any of the knockdowns, I had a few, and they were all pretty later on in my career, is that your punch resilience gone? Because I was never, any of my fights that I was put down, I was never wobbly in my legs. I was always down, straight back up and got back to work again. There was never a stage where I was dizzy.
I needed
to hold on to get that. Like, I was never, ever like that. And whenever I got knocked down against Berlanga, so just had to get straight back up. And that's where probably a previous me might have that ego and that macho-ness, right? I got to get back. This time, all that's gone. Like, I'm here to win this fight. So I just need to get back to my boxing. And that's what I did.
And it stood you in good stead, didn't it?
It did. And there was a stage, though, where Berlanga started heaping on the pressure because it was an opportunity for him to announce himself as well. Like, if he stops me, that's brilliant.
And this was a headlining DAZN event as well, too. This was a huge deal for both of you. Like, what 100%, a platform.
Like, this was really to catapult. He went on and fought Canelo after it. Do you know what I mean? So this was the one to catapult. But I seen him getting frustrated because he couldn't pin me down. And I was like, brilliant. Just keep doing what you're doing. But I seen him heaping on the pressure and I couldn't really keep him off anymore. So there was a stage in the fight, I think in maybe the fifth or sixth round, he got me on the ropes. And I just had to earn my respect.
Yeah.
That's when you do it intelligently. I had to stand there toe to toe and just let them go with him. And I caught him. He let his shots go. I was blocking, defending, slipping, rolling, and countering and hitting him with good shots. Within 15, 20 seconds, he steps
backed off.
You know,
and that was a little battle you've won there.
That's a battle that I've won, you know. And in that fight as well, I believe I was winning on the scorecards. There was a knockdown. Anybody on the planet can watch this knockdown. My feet got tangled. I went down. He didn't even hit me. I was walking back the way. My feet got tangled, went down, called it a knockdown. That's boxing.
The rest is history. You know what I mean?
These things happen.
It's a tough pill to swallow, though, when it's in a career-defining fight.
Like, that could have completely changed my career, completely changed my direction. I do believe that things happen in life for a reason. Sometimes it's hard to agree with that.
Tough pill to swallow.
You know, it's hard. Like, I look at that and be like, look, he went on then and he boxed Paddy McCrory and, you know, took Paddy apart, like six rounds. I think he stopped him and then he went and fought Canelo. Like, that could have been me, but I'm not the person to sit back and be like, shoulda, woulda, coulda, this could happen, that could happen. It happened. That's it. We move on with life. I'm in a great place right now. Wouldn't really want to change anything. Of course, you would have loved to have fought Canelo. You'd have loved to have experienced, get into the ring with him, like toppling Canelo. Like, where would that have put me?
Yeah, but as you say, you could have been 1 week out and twisted your knee.
Exactly.
So,
or
you
Canelo
know,
is a ferocious puncher. Like,
yeah, that's what I wasn't going to say.
You know, like you could, and that's the.
But not trying to dig into the psychology of or whatever, but you know, fights physically take it out of you, I presume. But see the emotional cost of that decision, the knockdown, and what could have, should have been. Did that in any way sour your love of boxing?
I've never actually thought of this. Like, after that fight, I turned around and be like, that's me, I'm done. And then this big fight got offered to me. And I was kind of like, oh, it's good money. It was a good fight. It was another headline fight. But then I was like, and also Andy said it to me as well. Like, do you really want to be just flung in there right away again? You know, another defeat. It looks bad. It hampers your reputation. Berlanga fight, put up a good performance. Some people thought I won the fight. You know, you're walking away on a good performance.
That's what I was going to say, because like, sometimes your reputation improves in defeat.
Exactly. And you know? And I believe that mine did improve after Berlanga, because people wrote me off. And after the Andrade fight, like, that one hurts me.
Mm. But I just think, if there is there an accumulative effect in the psychology that you know, you say, right, I'm going to commit to a 3-month camp now or a 2-month camp now, yet some referee can, you know, confuse legs getting tangled together with a knockdown and all of that effort. I'm not in control of that.
Yeah. That's the thing that we work on in psychology, like in with my psychologist, and you know, you work on the controllables, like what can you control? Like, I can't control what that referee's going to say.
I can't remember his name. It's the third. It was a dude you fought for an area title in America. What's his name? Something the third. Anyway, I noticed it popped up on the Zuffa. He's in the
something the third.
Yeah, is it the third or second? I'll get that too.
Shane Mosley.
Yeah, Shane Mosley.
Oh yeah, Shane Mosley Jr. Yeah.
Yeah, he's popped up on the Zuffa now, making the big moolah.
Yes. So I met Shane. I was at the first ever boxing event over in Zuffa in Las Vegas. And I met Shane. We had a good conversation. Conversation went, how's things? What are you doing? What's happening now? Are we going to get it on again? And I was there. He was there. There was a reason we were both at a Zuffa card.
Yeah.
There was potential of signing with Zuffa.
Yeah.
I knew that that's why he was there. And we just spoke to each other. And we says, look, Zuffa's new on the blocks. They're going to be putting big money into fighters.
Were you offered a contract with Zuffa?
I never got officially offered a contract, but we were in talks about potentially signing.
I mean, like, it sounds to me some of your best opportunities have come since your last fight.
Yeah.
But you've knocked them back, or they weren't for the right reason.
Yeah.
Which I find fascinating. It's only you can make those decisions.
Yeah.
And you have to factor in everything. As you said, health, wealth, family, kids. I get all of that. But my word, you've had some opportunities since that fight.
Yeah, definitely have. You know, and I suppose I can say, no, I'm really grateful to be in a position that I can turn them down.
Yeah. Okay. You know, well, that's it. Yeah. That's the answer, isn't it?
I'm in a great position where I don't have to get in there anymore and fight for
livelihood. You're okay. The kids might have to get a job.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And to be honest, even if they had that generational wealth, I would still rather them get a job. I think
they're not getting the Canelo dollars.
Yes, yes. And maybe that's why it all just didn't go the way that I maybe had it in my head.
You seem to have a really important role, at least with some of Andy Lee's boxers. Talk to me about that. Who are you working with Andy Lee?
So working with Hamza Shiraz. And
now you and him seem to have a particular connection there.
Yeah.
And now, I'm just saying this from watching the telly.
Yeah, yeah.
But I noticed he kind of was looking for you after his last fight, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so with Hamza, the reason that I was brought in there was because Hamza fought Berlanga.
Right.
And that was Andy's first fight coaching Hamza.
Mm.
So Andy messaged me and we were talking. I'd be up in the gym, like I call up to the gym to the lads all the time. And Andy messaged me and was like, I'd like to have you in the corner against Berlanga for Hamza. I was like, geez.
I'll do that, yeah.
Delighted. Yeah,
it's absolutely. It's not in Santry, is it?
And Andy also said to me, you know, he just says, like, are you okay with that? Like, because obviously Berlanga beat me in my last fight. Like, he was like,
he didn't want to put you down as some sort of an advisory minion role.
Yes.
He didn't want to disrespect you.
No, he like wanted me in there. And before the Berlanga Hamza fight, the way that it goes, you go in and check the hand wraps. So if me and you fighting, one of your team goes into me, one of my team goes into you. I went into Berlanga.
What did he look at you?
He looked at me and goes, what the fuck are you doing? I says, I'm back for another shot. And yeah, we had a good conversation. And to be honest, like,
is that trying to get a little bit of psychological advantage there as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, it is. And like, Berlanga knows he had a tough night with me. Like, do you know what I mean? And now here's another guy coming in that
he fancies. He knows me, and he fancies he's going to beat me.
Exactly. Yeah. So we went in, and I was very shocked, actually, at his changing room. It was massive changing room, and so many people in it. But the vibe was so good in there.
Right.
Like, Berlanga, he's mouthy, he's out there, he's big, he's brash, he's all this. But, like, he had, like, gospel music playing.
Right.
You know, I was like, this is...
Decent space.
This is good space that they're in here.
But you can't go out and say that.
No, I wasn't like...
Oh, Hamza.
Yeah, I was like...
You have your hands full tonight,
yeah,
man.
I was like... They looked to be in a good place over there, you know. But I was just in ruffle little feathers and things like that. And
it's the 0.0 of percentages that just to get your mind off.
Exactly. But no, it was good. It was
but you were on that journey now with him, aren't
yeah,
you?
So I've been in then when he, another unbelievable experience where he won his world title in the, at the Glory in Giza out at the pyramids. Like, that was, like, it actually felt fake, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, we were walking into the ring and you turn around and there's the three big pyramids. Like, it looked like, do you ever see the Truman Show?
Yes.
Like, it was as if there was a big board there that had this on it. Like, it was...
I just thought it was, like, listen, I mean, you're a star, there's no doubt about it, but watch that. And then, like, I didn't know you had any involvement in that.
Yeah.
And cut to the corner and you're on the boxer's left. Thanks, Jason. Jason, quickly came in there.
No, look, I've struck up a real good relationship with Andy. Like, obviously, we spent a lot of time together in the gym, but also, you know, we've created a real great relationship now outside of boxing as well. And obviously, Andy, you know, likes my vibe and likes my energy around his fighters. Mm. And I will be in the corner for Paddy Donovan as well. Now.
Brilliant. Excellent. Yeah.
So, like, you know, all these little things, you know, I look at and I try to look at things in the most positive way. Like, I look at, okay, I never won a world title, but, you know, I was there in the corner when Hamza won a world title.
Yeah, you know, but everything you've done, though, it's up until, I think certainly at a point in your career, you've made all the decisions.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people find themselves sort of in the corner for Hamza or a future star, and it's like, oh, I'll do anything to be involved in big time boxing.
Mm.
But you could still right now get yourself a headline fight if you wanted to, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Right. This is your choice. Yeah. This is your decision. Yeah. This is what you want to do in the game, and it's what suits you right now.
Yeah.
You know, so, and, I mean, you know yourself when someone does something for too long.
Yeah.
Or they,
And that was something, you know, look, I'm a very simple kind of fella. Like, you know, I like a simple kind of life.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? I like the good things in life as well, of course. Do you know what I mean? But, like, I'm easily pleased.
Yeah.
Do you know? And that kind of really satisfies me in life, because, like, I'm not going reaching and searching for things that is out of my lifestyle.
Yeah,
or,
it's a contentment, which is, and
I am really content, and I think
for...
that's the reason why I have made so many decisions in my life, because I'm probably afraid of losing of what I actually do have. Like, I've got to a place in life where I'm really happy, I have a beautiful family, I have beautiful people around me, you know, I'm really happy in the life that I'm living, live a good life, I enjoy my life that I'm living, and I don't want to lose that, or I don't want anything to happen to me where I can't be a part of my family, or I can't be providing good things for my family,
and you still are. I mean, can you imagine being able to go over there to that event? There's a couple of events that were over there, and to walk back to the dressing room without a cut eye.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, batter away, Hamza. I'm all right here, son.
See, waking up the next day. Like, of course, you know, Hamza waking up a world champion must be such an unbelievable feeling.
Is he going to go all the way in terms of everything he can achieve.
I honestly think that Hamza has that superstar appeal.
Mm.
Like, he really does. You know, the way, like, it's one of the most professional setups I've ever seen or ever been a part of. Like, the way the team works, everybody has a role and nobody interferes in anybody else's role.
Mm.
But everybody works together.
Right, I get you, yeah.
Like, unbelievable. The whole team there, like, his father, his brother, his manager, you know, their nutritionist, Andy, myself, like, everybody that's in there all has such a vital role. And nobody is spread thin. Everybody knows their role. They're not thinking, right, well, I got to go do this, 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 and this. They go like, this is my role. Yeah. This is what I got to do. Yeah. And it is one of the most professional setups. Hamza is such a grounded, his whole family, his whole team, they're such a grounded
But that's kind of, again, as someone watching on, he seems to be taking responsibilities outside of boxing, you know,
exactly.
Ambassadorship. And also, I'd be really interested to see him in the trenches.
Yes. In what way?
Just really back against the rope, tough fight.
Yeah.
Ninth round, opponent's got a second win, maybe taking a knee in the eighth, battering it out to the
and
final belt.
Like, I've seen him in the gym. I've seen him how, I see he can go into the trenches.
Yeah.
You know, he has that in him. And he will have to do that at some stage at his level. That will have to happen. It has been ordered that he is scheduled to fight Janabek, who is another opponent.
We might see it sooner than anticipated.
Is another opponent of Mayan. Boxed him in the world final in Kazakhstan. So, you know, that's a very interesting fight.
Who's left that you've fought that he's yet to fight?
It's like I'm teeing Hams up just to take out any man that has taken me out in the past.
You had a fantastic amateur career and indeed could have gone on to, we don't know what you would have achieved in Olympic glory, but decided to go professional. You know, we know you've made some big decisions later in your life, very confident in them, no regrets. That was the right decision at that time as well too, was it?
Yeah, definitely for me, you know, I look back and it's very similar to the professional side of my career as well. You know, you look at it being like, geez, it would have been great to go to the Olympic Games. And don't get me wrong, I would have loved to have went been a part of the Olympic Games, represented my country in the Olympics. You know, but I looked at things and I represented my country for years. I wore that vest with pride and with honor. And, you know, I achieved European gold, world silver, was the world number one in the amateurs. So, like, all this kind of stuff made me confident in my decision to go pro because I felt like I'd already honored my amateur
career.
Well,
that's what we'll see when you're an amateur fighter versus a pro fighter. I might be framing this completely wrong. It feels that you're part of a team and you're fighting for your club and you're fighting for your country, even though it's an incredibly individual sport. Mm-hmm. But when you're a pro, it's more about you, what you can achieve, what you can earn. Is it like that?
Is what like that?
Boxing. So in other words, you know, as an amateur boxer, it's as much for your Finn Valley Boxing Club and for the country and the flag and the vest, and that's what you're thinking of. But when you go pro, this is about your time now.
It's a major switch. Like, whenever you're on the national team, like, you have your nutritionist, your psychologist, your physio, your training, your food, your accommodation. Like, you had everything taken care of. Everything was covered. Soon as you turn pro, soon as you walk away from the Irish Sports Council,
you're on your own.
You're the boss.
Right.
Which I found so, like, I couldn't grasp
it
at all.
And it's a business, isn't it, really? It's
exactly. Soon as, and this is what I tell a lot of my fighters now.
Yeah.
Like, you're in control. Like, I'm working for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and I never looked at that because I never had that in my life. Like, you know, I always had the Irish team. I always had the club. You always you know, something that kind of, you were never the main person.
Yeah.
Whereas when you turn professional as a boxer, you employ your coach, you employ your nutritionist, you employ your physio, your psychologist.
Do you have to employ the sparring partners too? You have to get them in, pay them.
Get all that. Like, you're the boss.
Mm.
And that's that was very difficult for me to get my head around. Like,
You've talked about how, you know, listen, we all have our parents to thank for what we achieve eventually. And I know your dad was a big influence and put up the hard miles and the graft. But there was a point whereby, in terms of your boxing career, you had to make a decision. Where is that in the timeline of your amateur stroke pro career that became difficult for you?
I think it was just around my third fight. Just things got too much. Just wasn't a healthy relationship then, and didn't feel like I wasn't enjoying boxing, and just wasn't working out.
Yeah.
Just had to make a change, and it was a very difficult change to make, but I had to do it, and yes, it was selfish.
Mm.
I'd done it for myself.
Was it selfish? I don't know. I think you're being unfair to yourself, framing
yourself.
Well,
maybe, like...
It's a decision you had to make for yourself.
I had to make
that. But I don't think that's a selfish decision.
Yeah, true, true. And maybe that's just... Maybe that's just me, you know...
Trying to take some responsibility, but you don't need to, right?
Yeah, true. Like, I did everything to the best of my ability. And for me to go on and achieve in my career, I had to make that decision.
Yeah.
And that was the decision.
And was it,
would I go back and change it? Absolutely not.
Yeah, and I'm not going to dig into it because, but my point, like, was it a father-son relationship problem or was it a boxer coach managery problem?
That was the problem.
Yeah.
Didn't know what relationship it was.
Right.
Like, it was... One minute is it a father son? Is it a coach boxer? It was all messed up. Like,
you see, you were talking to about Hamza's situation. Like, for me, and I, you know, all families are the same. It's great if it's working, but that just sounds like a ticking time bomb to me.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm not actually saying that you're saying that about Hamza's situation because there's differences and there's cultural differences and there's a million different but for me, for just say for an Irish family or something, you know, working with family and even the closer you are to them, if it's working for a while, great, but there's inevitability to it.
Like, father-son relationships and boxing, they're very far and few between that work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of them, and they'll always have their difficulties, they'll always have their issues. I think the same with anything, even if your coach isn't your father, like, you'll always have a wee bit of confrontation or there's something will
because
go on there.
You man up, right? And I see it with my own boys. When they get to a certain age, you know, there's a bit of pushback.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? And especially in the dynamic where you're putting it all on the line, you're the one getting your head lobbed off. It's your family that you have to care about. It's so easy to see how that could start spoiling the dynamics of a father-son relationship because you're the man there. You're, you know, but he's the dad and he's the man.
Yeah. And, you know? And like, it just, for me, it wasn't a healthy relationship. I would probably have, if it had to continue, if I didn't have a choice and it had to continue that way, I probably would have packed in boxing quicker. You know,
I guess,
wasn't enjoying it, wasn't happy. And as I says, that was a decision that I had to make for me. And to better myself and take in, as this is, would I go back and change it? Absolutely.
But it's
not
a perfectly understandable situation. But I, you can clear, as you frame it and describe it, you can almost hear the background info you have churning in your head that I don't know of, right?
Yeah.
But I understand exactly where you're coming from. It's around about that time, too. You mentioned Katie Taylor's manager. You were in talks for him to represent you at that time, were you? Around about then?
Yeah, so Brian was, he was a front leader, really, to be honest. Like, it was very unique for me whenever I was turning professional because I already had a promoter ready to sign me. Usually you get a manager and then your manager gets you the promoter, whereas Golden Boy wanted me. I had a contract.
Yeah.
I took the contract to Brian.
Yeah.
Well, my dad, me and my dad did.
Yeah.
And to be honest, it was my father and Brian that butted heads.
Mm.
and it just didn't really
And did out. He say, I can work with you, but I can't work with you and your dad?
Well, you see, the problem was I never knew everything.
Right, I get you.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like, and I think, I don't know, was in my father's head, was he trying to protect me or was he trying to, but...
You can be sure it was coming from a good place,
yeah.
Whether it was the right thing or not.
Exactly, yeah. And...
So you weren't getting all the info?
No.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't have been getting the whole info of everything that was going on. And that was to let me concentrate on my boxing.
Yeah, I get it.
Things. Yep. Would I change anything to go back? And
well, what would have happened differently with Brian, I wonder?
I would have probably been more... Brian would have probably pushed me to be more based in Ireland.
But could that have jived with the De La Hoya contract, the Golden Boy contract either at the same time?
Well, like... I probably could have, like, right. Because Brian was kind of doing shows in Ireland, you, and different, yeah, things they, yeah, had. They could have, you know, co-promoted on a few different things and worked around that. Whereas my first couple of fights, you know, Golden Boy tried to get me on the East Coast. Mm. Worked brilliant. Mm-hmm. Had one or two fights over there. Crowds were great. It was building nicely. Was on Fox Sports. They had a great deal there. Then something fell through from Golden Boy and Fox Sports. That relationship fell through. Then I was kind of back over in the West Coast again and in my Mexican community.
I was going to say, is this where El Animo came?
Yeah, you know, I'll still go back. Me and the family, we go back to LA every year and I'll still walk down Venice Beach or I'll be walking Santa Monica somewhere and you'll get somebody shout, hey, El Animo, you know, and it's it's cool and it's nice and, you know, it's just, those are the things, you know, that you find like, geez, that's a bit weird. Like, you know, because only something popped up the last day and it was my second pro fight in the StubHub over in California. And it was on the Kell Brook undercard when he won the world title over there against Sean Porter. And it was 12 years ago. Like,
unbelievable.
12 years ago, like, I just feel like I'm living a different, I'm living a different life now, but, you know, that's what we were talking about earlier, like, even me, you kind of forget.
Of course, yeah, because how couldn't you? Kell Brook, rumoured to be fighting Chris Eubanks Jr., who wins that?
Yeah, I would like Kell, but... I just think he's
old.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Like, really like
And maybe
Kel.
He wasn't as disciplined as you were.
Yeah, Kel loved I don't know what.
Just Google it.
Yeah, yeah. Kel loved an extravagant kind of lifestyle.
He's in great shape, though.
You know, keeps himself in great shape, so he does. And I do think he's probably in a better place now than he was maybe in the midst of some of his career.
Ben Garcia.
I just think Garcia is too good.
Of course he is.
Yeah. Like, I really like Conor Benn. Like, that first fight and the second fight with Chris Eubank Jr., like, I just think, like, I loved his aggression and his fuck you attitude.
And
like,
no quits.
Like, I love that about Benn. Really liked him. A lot of people don't really like him, but that's, I look past the persona and out there and everything like that. I've met Conor a few times at events and, you know, great fella, down to earth, great conversations with him. But, like, to me, I have so much respect for the way that he gets in there and handles business. Like, he'll just go through.
But do you think some of that he has to, I mean, his dad arguably was similar, is that he compensates, maybe he wouldn't be as skillful as Garcia, or even maybe Eubanks Jr. is marketing 101.
Yeah.
His career, he's got so much money.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But he's middling.
Very,
at best.
Very average.
Right.
You know, very average.
At best.
Yeah.
But anyway, Ben has that generational wealth we were joking about earlier. He's only doing it because he loves boxing. Yeah. And it's hard to beat that.
Oh, like, it's... And that's where you see a lot of fighters maybe fall off, is when they start...
Making the money.
Making the money, and they're like, well, I don't have to go for a run this morning.
Yeah. But as much as you like him, Garcia is...
Yeah, I think Garcia is just too good. I think he's too sharp. He's too, like, I think he's too powerful. I don't like Conor Benn down at that weight either. Like, I think, like, the way Conor Benn performed against Chris Eubank Jr. at middleweight, like, how does he not stay there?
Yeah.
I know it's a big weight division, it's a big jump, but, like, I've seen it now through the years, and even myself, personally, when I moved up to super middleweight, I just felt so much better at super middleweight.
But you see, this is what comes back to your discipline and the way you've structured decisions that you've made. He probably couldn't resist a bit of beef online and go down as low as he had to go to square off with Garcia.
Yeah.
And it's probably not the bravest thing to do because he's in against someone, a natural weight, big puncher. You know, if you're talking about your life and your family, you know, you that's why you weren't making those decisions. It's not a good decision by him, but it's fantastic for sports fans. You have the status to, you know, you're operating at the highest level behind the ropes, so to speak, with Andy and all of that. So the only reason, really, that you would be trying to grow boxing here in Donegal is because of your love of it and to give boxers opportunities. You don't really need to be doing that. Why is it so important to you? Because you're starting to put on really successful shows. There's a buzz about it. It's a Saturday night out and it's growing from strength to strength.
Yeah, so like it was just, I never had the opportunity. Like everything that I did as a boxer was
travel, away from
travel,
home.
Travel. And I was set myself up lovely as a professional, didn't have to sell tickets, had a great management team behind me, you know, lived a great life over in LA, didn't have to worry about anything. Whereas, like, I have so much respect for fighters that want to fight. They work a job, they have to sell tickets, you know, get sponsors on board. Like, and for them to be able to do that locally where it takes down the cost for them to do it. And don't get me wrong, like, I'm doing it for the love of boxing, for the love of where I'm from. But I really would love to create a champion, a much bigger professional than I ever was from this county, from this country.
Wow, that's noble, like, yeah.
Like, that there, like, if I could, like, there's a few young lads there that's coming through right now, and if I could bring them to bigger heights than I ever was, for them to go and achieve dreams that they only ever dreamed of, you know what I mean? Like, that to me is, would be success.
How do you scale the promotion, or is this... you know, because even on any boxing scene in any country, there's levels, right? And you can operate at a certain level in perpetuity. It's perfectly fine. Or is are you building towards, you know, a big fight night? Maybe, you know, a couple of big titles on the line? Yeah. Or is that the dream?
Like, right now, I'm just building a foundation.
Yeah,
I'm not in a massive hurry. I'm not going to rush fighters into fights that they don't need. I want to look after my fighters, want to bring them along nicely. And it's hard nowadays to hold fighters back because they see these big Matchroom, Queensbury shows, Saudi shows. Yeah. They want to be a part of it. But promoters aren't... The way Eddie Hearn promoted Katie Taylor, he's not doing that now with his fighters.
Right.
Like, there's no fighter there now that he signs for maybe 5 years.
Yeah.
And promotes them. It's too big of an investment.
Mm.
They've got all this money coming from the Saudis. They don't need to put in the time, the effort, the work that they used to have to do promotion. So there's a massive gap in the market.
Normally. I think the one exception is that Australian heavyweight. It's got the same name twice.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there might be a little bit of, I need someone here to break the... to break the other guy's hold on the heavyweight scene. I think that might be the only exception.
But wait till you see... They're not going to bring him to 10-15-0 before he steps into a big fight.
Yeah.
They're going to move him pretty quickly couple of fights. Whereas before, you know, you build...
I know what you're saying.
You built a following.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you brought these guys to their hometown. Yes, the big Australian is... Is he New Zealand or Australian?
Australian. The only reason I know is because Parker's New Zealand, isn't he?
Yeah,
right. Parker's this New guy's Zealand. Australian. Yeah. That was with the two continents.
I wasn't sure then because he does the dance and everything.
That's right.
I don't think it's the haka that he does.
A version of it. Yeah.
Powerful dance. But so like, I just see that market now that like, where you can build and grow. Like, there's no real household names anymore.
Yeah, it is. It's really interesting because I presume the business has changed. I don't know. I don't have an insight whereby, you know, Eddie Hearn grew on Katie Taylor and Joshua, for an example.
Yeah.
And if you track their careers, you track Matchroom Boxing.
Yeah.
But he's at the point now where he's got locked in money with DAZN and what have you. He doesn't have to graft.
No, doesn't have to do that anymore. Like, he can just pick fighters up now. It's like a conveyor belt. Not nice to say, but it's like a conveyor belt. This shiny product comes along. Wow. Keep it going. Yeah. Keep it going. Right. Test it out. Doesn't show up. Right. Who's next on the conveyor belt?
But your guys, they come through a few, you know, someone rings you and say, look, I'm looking for such and such a person. They get to another show and then they come back and find, you know, there's a real pathway there. And I'm sure this is what you're telling your guys. There's actually a pathway there with your connections and what have you and through the shows that you're doing for someone to be. Because I'll tell you the one thing is with Irish boxing now, the big guys are looking for the next big thing because they want to keep filling out 3 Arena.
And that's the
and
thing.
Up in Belfast
and that's
as
the
well.
Thing now about a lot of fighters. So, like, with my fighters now, we're still early stages. Like, we have Reece Owens now, who is an 8-round fighter. Reece Owens is going to be headlining our next show, Rumble in the Hill City, October 24th in the Aura. He's our first one now that has made it to 8 rounds.
Yeah, gets you, yeah.
You know, they're all coming along nicely. And people are starting to watch him and thought, I remember his pro debut. Mm-hmm. And now he's fighting for a title.
Yep.
Next thing, my...
Because they have access to them.
Exactly. Yeah. And my aim, next year, I'm really hoping, this is the plan and this is where I want to get to, have DAZN in Donegal. Have a title fight on. Bring in some fighters. You see the likes of Queensbury now, they have Stephen Cairns from Cork, they have Bobby Flood in Dublin, they have Big Adam Alanian in Dublin. You know, these is three fighters that we can say now, look, we have a show up here in Donegal. You know, we'll move it, we'll make it bigger, we'll try our best to broadcast it even bigger than the Aura. And the way to do that is saying to them, share your demographic of these fighters. These are Dublin, Cork lads. They're Irish, though. They're Irish, which is so important. Mm. Bring them to Donegal. Spread their following.
Yeah.
Like the way the promotion used to be done.
I don't think that's a pipe dream either because, you know, look, is it the York... Is it the York Hall's a tiny venue, right?
Tiny,
right? But
the Ulster Hall.
The Ulster Hall.
Tiny.
And also, too, if you watch DAZN, there's some pretty ropey regional American boxing on it. 100%. I think you could do 10 times a show with that.
And the way that I want to do that is, like, I don't want to just jump in there right now and do it because I want to build my fighters to when they're ready.
But you know what's funny? You're holding your boxers back, but you have to hold yourself back
exactly.
You have to say, right, I'm like you, I want to race ahead, but... It's a patient game, isn't it? It's a waiting game.
Exactly. And all these fighters, whenever their time comes, they're going to be ready because professional boxing, it's a completely different sport than amateur boxing. It takes time. You need to be going 6, 8, 10 rounds against durable opponents, starting to find things out in your game, starting to find things out in yourself, who you are, where you can go whenever shit hits the fan in the ring. Do you know, can you overcome things?
Mm.
And that's when you really learn and grow as a fighter. And when your opportunity comes, the likes of Queensbury, the likes of Matchroom, the likes of Zuffa, they're bringing big cards here. But I'm not going to throw my fighters in there in
Lambs
a 50-50 fight right away just to be a part of these shows because they're not ready for that yet.
Yeah.
They're still building, they're still growing.
Yeah.
But whenever my fighters get to that stage, they will be ready and they'll be ready to cause upsets. They'll be the ones then that are signing the contracts with Zuffa, with Queensbury, with Matchroom and getting those deals. That's the vision that I have. That's the goal that I have. And that's the way that I'm looking out for my fighters.
And I think you really need, they need that. And I hope they respect that because, you know, you're seeing in Zuffa, one defeat, contract cancelled.
Yeah.
You're seeing, you know, 8-0 fighters versus 6-0. And sometimes one of them or both never come back from that either, you know, because it's, you know, they're a commodity and they need to listen to you to understand that if you want longevity, there is a process. 100%. You can't shortcut it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, listen, it's been great having you on. Thanks so much for all of your insights. And it's great to see what you're doing for boxing as well, because you don't have to. Actually, one other question I wanted to ask about your shows. What are you like at pulling in favors? Like, you know, you know what I'm on about? Say Andy Lee could help you out. Would you say, you know, Andy, you know, would you be any good at that? Would you?
It's something that I'm working on.
That's what I'm thinking.
Like, it's something right, like, yeah. I'm not like, and it's
or
a,
any of them for that matter. You've got a ton of
it's
contacts.
It's another kind of thing, like, where, you know, look, the way that was whenever you were fighting, whenever you were a boxer, like we spoke earlier in this conversation, was everybody wanted a piece of you. Mm. You got everything handed to you. Like, I never really had to go out and do much. If I needed anything, my manager went and got it done. My agent went and got
fucking
it done.
Diva.
Do you know what, like, and that is the way that it was. Whereas now, like, I have to change that mindset, change that thing. Now, like, and it's an Irish thing. Like, a lot of Irish people, like, you know, hate asking for things, or, you know, but now it is something that, like, whenever I get to that stage now in the next year, like, I will be like, you know, Andy, Paddy Donovan, Hamza, you know, guys.
But they, I mean, as well as that too, but this is the Irish part of it. I mean, they obviously hold you in very high regard as well.
Yeah,
and they're probably going, is this guy ever going to ask me for a
favor? Well, like, everybody always thinks Donegal so far away. Like, every time I mention anything, like, Andy has mentioned it a few times. Hamza has mentioned it to me. Joseph Parker actually said it to me the last time. He was like, oh, your show's coming up. Where's that? I was watching Donegal. And they're like, oh, how far is that away? Like, 3 hours. Like, 3 hours?
Why are you telling him that?
I know, but now I tell him, I was like, get a flight. I says, there's flights going from Dublin up to Carrickfinn there.
But you have a balance to strike there too, between not wanting to take the spotlight off your boxers as well.
Yeah, of course. So
it's
good in terms of, like, getting more bums on seats see your fighters in as well. Course, do you know what I mean? Is. Like, imagine, like, and fingers crossed down the line, like, imagine you had special guests, Hamza Shiraz, Joseph Parker, Andy Lee, Paddy Donovan. Imagine,
unbelievable.
Do you know, imagine you had those special guests at your fights in Dublin or in Donegal.
Yeah, of course. And why not? Brilliant stuff. Listen, it's so exciting. And I think it's great that you're so in control of where you're at. You still are not retired from boxing, right?
Yeah, like, I've never made
a call.
What
are you waiting for? I mean, you've been offered big money, big money headline fights. Yeah. Potentially, you could go to Zuffa, though. I think that would be, I would think you could be abused in that or misused in that.
Yeah.
But you're just never, you're leaving that door slightly ajar for the opportunity you just can't say no to.
Yeah. I think, you know, being honest with you, I think over, before the end of the year, I'll probably be making that call. Yeah. Like, and, you know, some fighters never retire. But I think it's something that maybe that, you know, I think I would like to just close the chapter. Like, and.
But you have, I mean, but it's a 3-fight process, right? Isn't it?
Yeah.
Because you'd have to have a cobwebs duster.
Yeah.
You'd have to have a tune up fight.
Yeah.
And then, so who out there is there a 3-fight plan with? Like,
there was potential with one or two promoters that I spoke about, but as I says, I never have following up with it. Like, you know, there's been promoters showing interest, there's been, you know, fights offered to me, and, you know, I've gone back and I've been like, yeah, well, look, this is what I want. They're like, okay, let's talk about it, let's work this out, and I just never follow up. So that's your answer as well. Like,
all right, listen, Jason Quigley, thank you so much. It's been an absolute treat having you on.